On this episode of Sega Talk, we're diving headfirst into the Dreamcast's iconic It's Thinking marketing campaign. We'll explore the development, massive multimedia push, and those unforgettable, often cryptic ads. Did it revolutionize console marketing, or just leave us scratching our heads? All this and more on Sega Talk.
SegaBits presents Sega Talk, a podcast talking all things Sega! With your hosts, George and Barry.
Look, it's a giant talking egg.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the master here. Say what?
Hello and welcome to Sega Talk. I'm your host, George. And with me is the artificial intelligence, Barry.
Hey, everybody.
So if you guys saw the show, we're talking about the It's Thinking marketing campaign from Sega, which was pretty iconic when it launched in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. And it encompassed a ton of ads. Mostly, I think the interesting ones were the commercials. I think the print ads were kind of weak, but we'll look at all of them. Why did I pick this episode? I guess because it was my pick. I picked it because A, it was easy to do notes, which is probably the most important part of when I pick an episode. B, it was iconic, and I really had fun when we did this Segathon Sanshiro episode, which you guys can see here on the YouTube video, a link to. And I think it's a interesting topic to talk about because it's one of those. I guess one of those marketing campaigns that kind of like transitioned over. I feel like there's a few marketing campaigns that kind of live on, and at least with the fans. And this one's definitely one of Sega's, like this one and the Sega Scream and the Sega Does, those kind of things. What do you think of It's Thinking marketing campaign?
I mean, it was pretty broad. You talked about the print ads being kind of disappointing, and yet it definitely felt like a few different marketing teams or whatever like took a crack at it, because it, to be quite honest, didn't feel fully cohesive. Mm-hmm. Like it felt like the commercials had one kind of take, the print stuff had a kind of weird kind of take, almost like Sega Saturn era marketing, and then yeah, but I mean, I think the most memorable and iconic moments are the ones inside the Dreamcast. It's basically what Wreck-It Ralph, the movie, is, you
right.
know? Yeah.
I would say, yeah, the inside the Dreamcast was a really good way of, like, delivering the Sega brand, because it also made all these characters together. Like, even if you were just a Sonic fan, you would see Sonic interacting with a NFL football star, because they're doing NFL 2K. So right. It was pretty cool. And then there was like Virtual Fighter characters. You never see this sort of like crossover with a lot of these companies. So it's cool, especially this early on in the 90s. Like, this is the era where we had to like scrap, like go on, like anytime TV would actually show gameplay footage, it was like a big deal to me, because I was like, you never see just gameplay on TV. And
That's true. So
this type of like seeing the models or whatever was actually, I thought, a big deal, because usually they're like clips from the game, but this one's like totally different animations, totally different style, really, because it's like Sonic as a DJ is one of the interesting ones we will talk about more. But yeah, very interesting marketing campaign. Where do you put this marketing campaign, like next to the other Sega iconic marketing campaigns?
That's a good question. I would probably rank it second to Welcome to the Next Level. Mm. And I'd probably do Welcome to the Next Level as number one. It's Thinking as number two. Genesis Does What Nintendo Don't as number three. And then, honestly, I struggle because I feel like Game Gear didn't have one. Saturn had some that I just don't think did well at all. But if we're talking Japan, I'd definitely throw Segata Sanshiro in there as maybe number four, just because, you know, I didn't grow up with it, but I definitely respect it.
And I think as the internet grew, we kind of like have known about Segata Sanshiro for such a long time. It's crazy. I would probably say it's about top three for sure. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think I really love the Sega does. So that's always been my favorite marketing campaign. I just think that's a big reason they kind of, you know, took so much market share when they did. So I'm a big fan of Sega does for sure. So let's talk about a little bit about development and launch. Sega of America developed a campaign with ad agency Foot, Cone, and Belding FCB in San Francisco. Creative director Brian Bansino and partner Stephen Fong conceived the idea and wrote the It's Thinking spots. The launch film, Acopolypse, which was 60 seconds, and a follow-up spot were directed by John Moore, who directed Behind Enemy Lines and A Good Day to Die Hard. That's his best films he's known for. Did you like A Good Day to Die Hard? This, like, I think it's like the fourth one, right?
Is that because Die Hard classic, Die Hard 2, kind of forgettable. Die Hard 3.
I like that one with Samuel L.
Jackson.
Awesome.
Die Hard with a Vengeance. Live Free or Die Hard is the fourth one. And I've seen that. I have not seen A Good Day to Die Hard.
It's probably really bad then.
I feel like I should see it just because after seeing what Bruce Willis is like now, like he forgot who he like doesn't have any memory now and he can't talk.
Oh yeah, that is sad. So, I will say about, I think this is the film where he has like a Russian son-in-law and he's like knows about computers or something. And he's like the old man. So, but I just, I don't know. I guess you should, when you see it, you'll be like, okay, that movie was good or bad or just okay. Most likely just okay. It's kind of hard to live to like, it's kind of hard to be like, hey, make a Terminator movie. And you're like, fuck, that sucks because like Terminator 2 is perfect. You can't really make a sequel to it.
They can't make a Terminator movie anymore without it just being a reboot because they're like, they can't make a sequel to Terminator 2. They keep like redoing it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's what I'm saying. That's how I feel like when you're so iconic, you really, it's really like just stop because you already did the best you can do.
Right.
And it was animated by Pacific Data Images, which actually became DreamWorks, I think. And they're the guys that did Shrek and a few other movies you guys might have heard of. Wow. So they're not a company anymore. They got, you know, their DreamWorks animation now.
Right. Well, Sega, they started on Dreamcast and now they're DreamWorks.
GameWorks was spun
off from DreamWorks and Sega owned that. That's crazy.
You're sounding like a conspiracy theorist. Sega SVP of marketing Peter Moore oversaw the strategy with inputs from product head Bernie Stoller, which kind of says why there was some Sega Saturn vibes since he's the Sega Saturn guy and the guy that launched the Dreamcast. FCB strategists Bonnie Wan, Patrick Kiss, and Jim DePaza.
Piazza?
Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Piazza. DePiazza, but I want to say the pizza.
And John Davis, who crafted the print ads. Sorry, John Davis, but no bueno on those. Those are the people in charge of these ads. What are your thoughts on Sega making like bigger choices with like bigger agencies? Because I'm pretty sure Foot, Cone, and Belding are the ones that do those Doritos ads from the early 2000s and those type of ads.
Oh.
So they like actually went to a big brand, like people that do Coca-Cola and actual big multi, billion-dollar, junk food, basically.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because I think it's pretty common, even as far back as the like 70s and 80s, for these campaigns to be handled outside of the company by like an ad agency. But obviously, the like Sega's creative director, for marketing, would have final say and approval, as would, I think, other higher-ups, like, you know, the equivalent of, like, a Tom Kalinske. But as far as, like, the box art and the, like, templates they do for that sort of stuff, and maybe even the packaging, that's kind of more in-house, typically. And when you see the crossover, it's when you might see an ad campaign like It's Thinking, and then you see visual elements of that used for the packaging. I don't think Sega went that far, but they definitely did have, and I don't have it on me right now, but I did have an It's Thinking brochure that would be given out at like Best Buy or something, maybe in the lead up to the release. So yeah, it's not uncommon. I actually worked for about 6 months at an ad agency that did all of the Xbox Kinect
marketing.
Yeah, that was interesting. I didn't have time to like seek out the people there. But what's also interesting is I actually met the man who would later become the current creative director for Atari. He was there, and he recognized me from our podcasts. Isn't that funny?
Really?
Yeah, that is... yeah. He heard my voice. He said, "I'm sorry, your voice sounds familiar. Have I heard you in something?" And I was like, "I do video game podcasts." And he's like, "Oh, the Sega ones." And I'm like, "Yeah." And then he was like, "Oh, cool. I run a video game." Anyway, long story short, like now he's creative director at Atari. It's just so funny.
And yeah, no, I like that. I would say like the only thing I missed was like having a guy like L. Nielsen, even though it's funny going back and watching him do like video interviews and like PR tours and like little creative things, like the more guerrilla marketing. I think the Dreamcast was way more bigger, and I think it really just speaks to how gaming was growing at the time. It wasn't more of like a schoolhouse bully. Like these guys were going to malls and having kids like play the games. Now it was like an assault tour for people that go to like Limp Bizkit concerts. You know, the
hell yeah.
And that's actually another thing that's weird. Have you noticed that Limp Bizkit's kind of making a comeback in the way of media? Like I'm just randomly watching something and then it's like Limp Bizkit song starts playing and I'm like, what the hell did that come from?
I have noticed that. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, okay. Like, I think Devil May Cry, the anime, the intro song is a Limp Bizkit song. It's like, what? What does it have to do with Devil May Cry? Sega supported its thinking with a broad multimedia push. Wait, sorry, I skipped the part. Concept work began as early as 1996 when Sega briefed its agencies on a yet unnamed next-generation console. After winning the Sega account, Bassino's team initially considered it internet / bring on the world theme, but shifted to artificial intelligence angle. Wow, they were really, really, they were really, really like early on the AI boom. When modem speeds proved limited, the It's Thinking tagline emerged from the pivot. As Bassino recalls, Dreamcast games learn and fight back. In other words, it's thinking. When you first saw the tagline, it's thinking, what was your reaction? Did you think the same thing that he was thinking? Like, this is, like, more advanced?
Yeah, it's interesting because the text or the dialogue in the commercials, and I'm sure we'll watch a few of them, they did kind of imply that the Dreamcast, like, learned. And I know AI wasn't really, it was a thing, but it wasn't what we knew it as now. Back in the day, it was more like, oh, this is a computer and it saves information internally. So when I come back to the game, like the game's going to like learn. And I was very confused by that because I was like, so how does the Sonic game change based on my inputs? Like, is there really some sort of like, I don't even want to call it like a computer system inside, but obviously that was all marketing speak, right? and bullshit. And so my only takeaway from it was that maybe this is just such advanced hardware inside of it that it has the ability to create like non-playable characters that are much more intelligent. So I thought, like, maybe, like, the NFL game, like, the rival teams are harder to beat than, like, on the Genesis or Saturn sports games. Like, that was kind of my mindset. But now looking at the whole Bring on the World aspect, they did something like that for Phantasy Star Online, which I absolutely loved. I forgot what the it was exactly, but it was like, now you can scream like a little girl in like 10 different languages or something. That's right. How they said it. But it was like,
right,
they really sold this, like, you are going to interact and talk to people from other parts of the world. And they didn't so much have it be like a bring it on, fight the world. But I really liked that aspect to some of the marketing, but that obviously is not, maybe that's not part of the It's Thinking campaign. But honestly, really what drew me in were all the like characters inside the machine, because right, it used game assets. Even though it wasn't game graphics, it was the in-game models animated and interacting. And it showcased just how many games and characters and cool-looking characters. Like, for me, I was like, I would never touch Ready to Rumble, but watching the commercials, I'm like, oh, these boxing characters look funny. Like, I want to try that game. Anyway.
Yep. I think that was, like, the best part of the marketing campaign for this. But as for the It's Thinking tagline, when I first heard it, yeah, I kind of thought more of, like, this console's so advanced that when you play it, it'll feel like it's learning from you and thinking. Because, you know, when you play some games and you're like, how do they know what moves to do next or whatever? Somebody has programmed that. I just assumed that, like, they had so much memory on there that they would be able to, like, program different strategies. So now your games are harder than ever. That's what I thought as a kid, like, when it first came out. Obviously, they also played the all the characters live inside of the Dreamcast, which is, I like too. For sure, it's probably one of the best marketing things. Like, I think Sony has done it recently when they do big events, but like somehow like their characters kind of clash. Like, they have like, yeah, Astrobot, and then they have Nathan Drake, a random dude with a gun that kills indigenous people in islands, and then you have Kratos, who like killed his like, you know what I mean? They're not like wholesome characters,
right? But, and going back to Sony too, shortly after with the PS2, they would push the emotion engine. Remember that?
Yeah.
And they claimed that their graphics processor could emulate real emotions, when really all it was doing was like, oh, we can make the faces change. And I'm like, well, yeah, right, so can Shenmue. Like, it's not anything special to make a character go from happy to sad. But anyway.
I guess I did talk to somebody that's really into the PS2, and they said that there is an engine there, and they called it Emotion Engine. I don't know what it does technically, but it's a... They're saying it was a little more advanced, but like the way Sony sold it was basically the gimmick, you know, like the Dreamcast is not thinking. Obviously, it's just the tagline. So I think the emotion stuff was dumb, though. I'm going to be honest.
It was a CPU developed by Sony. So there's actual a physical, like if you took apart a PS2,
right,
you would find emotion, a thing that said EE, Emotion Engine.
Yeah, so I always thought, like, why do you want an emotional console? Come on, man. You want to get in there and play.
So it can cry because it knows the Dreamcast is superior.
That would have
it
been,
can cry when you...
That would have been a good marketing campaign, like the PS2 crying.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sega supported its thinking with a broad multimedia push. Major television buys plays Dreamcast ads on youth-oriented networks, MTV, Fox, WB, UPN, ESPN. Sega ran 950 spots on MTV alone from July through March of 2000 and bought airtime during sports events, including Monday Night Wrestling and ESPN, which kind of made sense because they also like really marketed their NFL and NHL and all those other games. The VMA sponsorship with 6 ads shown live was billed as a Super Bowl for young adults. Okay, first of all, you ever see the VMAs and did you ever go, oh my God, everyone come to my house after school, we're watching the VMAs tomorrow?
I think maybe back in the 2000s, because we had music videos themselves were a lot bigger, and I think they even did video premieres at the VMAs. I could be wrong.
I think that's I what it see was. That.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, maybe for normal people, but gamers, probably not so much. And I think at this point, they were trying to get the normies, obviously, not just us that were going to buy it anyway. Like, Sega could have literally just been like, here you go, give us the money. And I would have been like, okay, let me go ask my mom. Sega targeted gaming media with print campaigns, including magazines like EGM, GamePro, and the obviously official Dreamcast magazine. The pre-launch swirl phase used cryptic ads showing only the logo. Yeah, we know that. The flowery eye, which we'll see. While we are Sega fans, so the hype was always there for us, did you notice your peers or other schoolmates at the time actually feel the marketing campaign or talk about the console in a positive way?
I think so. I think a lot of people were excited about the online gameplay and how simple Sega made it, because, you know, I know other consoles had it, but let's be honest, like PS2 did not make it simple. They were like, you have to buy a thing, and by the time it's not included, you're just like, forget it. And then the amount of games it worked with on the PS2, just abysmal. But you looked at the Dreamcast and it was like, okay, it comes packed with it, so I don't need to buy it. And then anytime I want to play online, I just get a game that has the online gameplay logo on the front. Like, it was so easy. And so I think the modem being included was really big, at least for my peers, because this was around the time that we could be trusted to be online on our own. And the idea of having your own, like for me, when I got my Dreamcast, I basically had my own computer. I had a mouse, I had the keyboard, and I could do the web browsing. And I know it's kind of archaic now, but think back to like 1999 or 2000, what you do on your computer is pretty close to what you do on the web browser in terms of just visiting websites. And the only thing it really kind of, the downside was videos were hard to play. You had to go, actually, I remember you'd have to visit sites that were like Dreamcast approved. Mm-hmm. Like, they were like, this site has been enhanced just to work on your Dreamcast. You're like, awesome, I can watch movie trailers, you know.
And I think they did, on the official Dreamcast magazine or some other magazines, they would actually have lists sometimes of some websites that were...
They did, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
Dreamcast official approved. Dreamcast magazine, yeah, they would be like, here's some great websites that work really well on your Dreamcast. And, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. My school, I knew a few people that bought it, and obviously we would trade games and borrow each other's games, which is great. VMU, it's the only time I actually tried VMU save swaps and stuff, but we really didn't need it, though, because, first of all, the VMU batteries die so quickly, I didn't have money to always be replenishing them, and we could just download them from the internet, you know, with Planet Web, you could just go on and download saves, which is crazy. I wish you could do that now, because like sometimes I'm playing a game like New Super Mario Brothers. I almost beat the whole game. I got like 80% done, and I accidentally deleted my save. I don't want to play it again.
And you know what killed that, and it's really lame, is the gamer score thing. Like people, companies got so strict with like achievements that they're like, there's no way that you will be allowed to download someone else's game save because it's going to mess with your gamer score. And it's like, who cares? Like, I miss the days when you could... Dreamcast was really the last console where you could find completed save files online. And I think it was the only one, really, because I never hear people talking about, oh, I downloaded some Saturn saves, you know?
Yeah.
No one does that.
I think maybe they could do it now, but then you have to probably jump through a bunch of hoops and like use a USB cord on your Saru or something. I'm like,
yeah.
The Dreamcast was the only one that like when it launched, you could do it. You know what I mean? Like when it was in its, you know, its height.
100%. Yeah.
Outside of that, I think like you said, a lot of people liked it because it was a cheap computer for their room. And their parents probably didn't know it was a computer. It was like $200. Computers back then were like, I don't know, like $1,000 minimum, I would assume. I don't know. Like, I know for
George,
a while.
let's get real for a second, all right? We're adults now. Can you admit, and I'll answer too, did the adults in your house know it had a web browser? Did they know that?
My mom didn't even know what a web browser was. So
did you look at porn on your Dreamcast?
Yes.
Everyone did.
I mean, we were teenagers, and not only that, yeah, my friend was like the only, like, he was the one that I had to go to because, well, first of all, my dad used to be on the phone all the time, so I only had one line, so it was kind of like, oh, man, I can only go on at this time with my 10 hours of, like, what's a stupid thing called Net Zero? Oh my God, uh-huh. After my 10 hours of Net Zero, I'm done. My friend was the only one that his dad actually paid, so we would be on IRC chats, and then he's like, you know, we could look at porn, and he's like, literally, like, boobies, you know.
They made there were porn sites that would say, like,
Dreamcast would list
Dreamcast. Yeah, wow. if you web search, because I forgot what the web search was at the time, Alta Vista maybe, because Google wasn't big at the time. But yeah, you would web search Sega Dreamcast porn website, and it would be like, these are the websites with, like, video files that are so small that they'll play in, like, grainy quality on your Dreamcast within seconds, and you're like, oh, cool, and then it's like the worst ever. But yeah, and I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit it. Like, it was
is, you know, kind of your first step.
Well, no, but it was like your first step into young adulthood to be like, I can be sneaky and look at porn on my Dreamcast. And no one knows because, sorry, it's not thinking. It doesn't save your browser history. It wipes it every time you turn your Dreamcast off.
It's only thinking when it matters, not when it doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah. So I also thought that the IRC chat rooms were really, really interesting. Like, the idea that you could talk to anyone around the world. In the, like, oh, a text fun, format, yeah. It was crazy, and it was also Sega fans.
And you could download any image, including porn, and then paint it on the streets of Shibuya, Cho, and Jet Set Radio. And so, of course, we would go to the raunchiest, you know, those sites where people are like, "Oh, it's called like Tub Girl. You should check it out." And then you check it, and then you're like, "I'm gonna download this and paint it to the walls in Jet Set Radio." And you'll see, like, and it was so funny because we're like, "Beat, what are you doing?" And it's like, he's like spray painting like the nastiest stuff. I won't even say what I have a distinct memory of one image we put up there, and I won't. But yeah, we added text and it said "eat your carrots." But yeah, anyway.
You sound a soldier that just came back from wars. I won't talk about it, but like
I'll do Segabits After Dark on our Patreon, and I'll say what we did.
All right. You guys check us out on patreon.com/SegaBits for SegaBits After Darks with Barry.
Yeah.
Soon. Partnerships and events. Sega tied the campaign into a wider promotion, a cross promotion with Pepsi, but Dreamcast Hot Topics ads in movie theaters, which I've never seen, during summer blockbusters, which I'm assuming they're just Dreamcast commercials. Specialty events included the Dreamcast Mobile Assault Tour, which sounds horrible. Oh, yeah. It's like, we just went around the road assaulting kids to buy a Dreamcast. So they had a Sega Don Sanchiro character, maybe. I'm joking. A road show with futuristic vehicles and celebrity endorsement programs to seed consoles to influencers. Retail and viral innovations were key prior to the launch of the Dreamcast, were demoed at retailers and even available to rent via Hollywood Video, July 1999. Did you remember when you could rent a Dreamcast? Did you ever try to do... I mean, I guess you had one, so you don't have to rent one.
I know, it's funny because I don't think it was well advertised because I didn't know about it. But that is wild that you could get it that early. I don't know why I didn't know about it.
I think it would have been pretty cool to get it early and then be able to play it and then be like, all right, I like it. I thought that console, now that the prices of consoles are going up now, like literally $450 is the new Switch 2. So that's now the bottom, right? Because Nintendo's usually the cheapest, right?
Right.
Wouldn't it make sense to have a company that does this where you could rent it?
Well, it's interesting because with the Xbox, they actually make it possible to play Xbox Series games on your Xbox One through the streaming. Right. And could you just imagine if Nintendo had the ability to, like, allow players to stream, live stream a playable demo from Switch 2 on their Switch 1?
Nintendo would never do that. Nintendo is, like, so traditional. They're like, why, when you could pay $90 for a new game?
That's true.
Here is what's... Oh, yeah, Sony also does that, by the way. You could, like, stream other consoles to your, like... So, like, nice. The Vita could stream your PS5, technically, I guess, onto the little screen. But, Nintendo will never do that. Here's the front page of Sega.com, what it looked like 25 years ago. And as you can see, there's no actual, like... You can't actually see... images, but basically they were so, can you picture this? You standing on stage sweating under Limp Bizkit's concert lights, a Sega Dreamcast controller in your hands. Take the rumble with the Rockstar Challenge. What do you think? Is this getting you hype? No.
I like the bit here where they're like, Fred Durst, tattooed frontman, stands across from you, smirking. A calm comes over the mosh pit. Concert fans wonder whose ass will be wiped across the stage.
Could it be yours?
Wiping your ass?
So basically what they... I remember the Dreamcast article about this, but basically they let you play on stage with Fred Durst, basically a Dreamcast game. And
that's ridiculous.
You got like a signed console by them, and it was all that. And it was their The Family Values Tour 1999, or probably wasn't 99. This is the CD you get. Sorry. So yeah, I don't know. Did you ever try to attend one of these Assault Tour events that Sega highly promoted, or even knew about it back then?
Again, I didn't know about it. Where would you learn about these things? Like, I guess in the local paper, or I don't know.
The underground music scene, brother. Where were you
at? I guess I just I feel like so much stuff that we like read about that happened during my lifetime. No one ever told me about this, so I feel like most kids did not know that there were, like, you could rent a Dreamcast, or that the Mobile Assault Tour had come to town, or that Fred Durst was, like, play a game of Dreamcast with
he's
you.
Gonna fuck you up, too, apparently. He's like...
Yeah, yeah.
And, digital and online was also a thing for Sega. Sega used its website and internet channels for the campaign, as we were looking at here with the site. All commercials were made downloadable from Sega's official site in very low quality, and Sega partnered with popular gaming sites, IGN, for online previews and promotions, which is normal. The console's built-in modem and SegaNet service were discussed as fringe talking points, though actual online gaming was limited at launch. Do you remember the IGN Dreamcast page being accessible via the Dreamcast? Because I used to look at it for news.
I do, yeah. I remember they... Well, I think every major video game, like, website would make a Dreamcast-compatible version. I remember that. But I would check theirs. I would check, obviously, Planet Web, because that was, like, official news. And then, what's the other one? GameSpot had one?
Yeah.
And then there were, like, the more underground fan sites. I remember there was one called Sega Dojo, I think.
Maybe. I'm thinking maybe.
It was a fan site, yeah.
Was it a GeoCities site?
I don't know. I'll have to dig it up. Maybe it's been archived. But, SegaDojo.com, maybe, but I feel like... Yeah. So Sega Dojo, last minute. I don't want to derail it, but yeah, I'm just looking here. Last minute continue has mentions of it back in 2000, so it does exist. I'll look it up sometime. That might be a fun Sega talk where we talk about like old fan sites that are long gone. That might be fun.
And I was going to ask you, what's your like opinion on like, well, this website, right? It's available for the Dreamcast. Were there any other websites that weren't game related that were Dreamcast accessible at least, or that you found them to be? Because I didn't really think of too many outside of like the email stuff.
You know, I think most websites did work with the Dreamcast at the time because websites were at like their core a lot more low tech. You know, like, I think really Dreamcast compatible websites were ones that didn't rely heavily on Flash because the Dreamcast didn't have Flash. And I don't think that hurt it at all, but I think that made people realize that, hey, maybe we should make our websites a little more accessible. Because nowadays, you would not dream of making like a Flash website because it would be obviously Flash is dead. But like, can you imagine how many people you're turning off from visiting your site because they don't have the capability or they're on a device that can't see it? Like, there are websites that actually dumb down websites so you can view them on your Dreamcast. I forgot what it's called, but I visited one not too long ago on my Dreamcast, and it removes all the stuff that makes it hard for the website to load, and so you just get like the photos and you get the text, and it's great actually. So
like a reading mode kind of. They have that on.
Yeah, it forces read mode basically. Yeah.
And as growing up when you first got the Dreamcast, did you really think that the online was? Did you notice that the online was limited at the time, or were you like not?
I definitely did because, you know, obviously, like, videos wouldn't play, photos took a while to load, you couldn't save things locally, and so it was more like an in-the-moment experience. It was a lot more reading, and it was a lot more, like, Dreamcast-focused browsing because you're looking for DLC, things like that.
I would agree. I think the online also, like, games taking a while to come out was very noticeable. Like, once you already had it all set up, you're like, oh, I guess we'll look at some boobs and go on IRC chat and troll some people. And then you're like, what game can we play? And then that's when they started getting a little, oh, there hasn't been one yet. Or I think NFL was the first one I ever tried, maybe. So, yeah, right. I don't know. And that was in 2001, I think.
I'm going to speak up now. Sega Dojo is actually a subsidiary of IGN. So they were, it was kind of like the equivalent of like how Time Extension is actually an extension of like a larger corporation, but they look like a fan site. So, yeah, I'm actually looking at, yeah, we're owned by Sega, actually. But I'm looking at it here, so it's interesting because I think I actually won a contest that they hosted when Sonic Adventure 2 came out, so that's kind of why I was like, Anyway.
By these means, Sega Dreamcast were ambiguous in late 1999. Sega even ran TV product placements and celebrity seating programs to ensure key influencers owned a Dreamcast. This led to amazing memes like The Rock, Redman, Cribs, MTV Cribs, and other artists being pictured with Dreamcast consoles. What is your thoughts on Sega going after influencers, which I guess in the early 2000s were just called celebrities, back in the early 2000s?
I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was kind of cool. It elevated Sega. I actually prefer that sort of thing to nowadays where it's like, and you and I, we complain offline or in DMs about this, where it's like, well, you never have, but you know, where it's like something real cool and they like mail it to someone who we've never heard of, who has very little reach. And it's like, were they a friend of like a Sega staffer? Like why are they getting this? Because they're not good at like what was one that came to mind, the Paramount Sonic 3 Genesis cartridge. They would send it to people who didn't own Sega Genesis consoles, and the whole point is to play the actual game. So I don't know why they didn't send it to, like, retro streamers who, like, play Genesis games on the regular. And instead they're like, oh, it's some guy who has zero connection to the Sega community. It's
and not only anyway. And not only that, like, there's some streamers that actually play not only Sega games but all other games, and like they actually have hardware and they have like 10,000 people watching them a night. I never heard of them getting it. They would have put it in our they would have at least showed it off right in a stream. So that
right.
I think it's
and
weird.
So in that sense, I kind of prefer the one where they bring in celebrities, because I'm not going to get jealous of, like, I don't know, like, who's a celebrity set? Well,
The Rock.
Perfect example. Well, maybe not him, but Keanu Reeves. I'm not going to get mad when they have Keanu Reeves playing Shadow the Hedgehog, because I'm like, well, he's voicing him. This is perfect. Or even, like, music artists, and then have the music artists, like, do a remix, or something. Like,
you don't want the Black Angry, or the Black Gaming Nerd, or what's his name, play Shadow, and then maybe Dreamcast guy play Sonic, and I play Amy? That'd be sick.
If we're doing stuff, you know, he's a funny guy, because I've seen him at a few, like, actual events I've gone to, and
the Black Gaming Nerd,
like,
or the Dreamcast guy?
I don't think his name is Black Naming.
What is his name? I thought that's what it was.
I think it's Black. It's Black Nerd, right?
Black Nerd. Okay, there you go. I'm thinking of, like, I was almost calling him the Angry Video Game Nerd.
He's a funny guy, because, like, he rose to fame so I guess he became so prominent that he would get picked for those sorts of situations where he would be, like, talking about something but also promoting it. And I remember when Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was debuted, he was there to, like, debut the character designs and react, and you could tell he didn't like it, but he couldn't voice it, so he's like, and let's check out Michelangelo. Wow, look at that, that's different.
That's
cool.
That sucks when you, like, have money invested. Like, it's like at work where they're like, oh, your boss brings in, like, something that's, like, terrible, like, check out my art, and you're like, oh, that is amazing.
I can just imagine if Sega brought, like, me on for, like, the debut of the Jet Set Radio 3 character designs, and, like, the first one, I'm like, this okay, well, this doesn't look very good. You know, actually, this character's name is changed. They changed their name in the localization in the second one, and looks like they're still going with that. It's, oh my god, and what, you know, they'd be like, oh, fire him, get him off stage now.
This is why we don't do anything with Sega anymore.
This is why we hire shills, yeah.
So let's look at some of the TV commercials. We got a few here.
Movies!
First one is the E3 promos, which is, like, I think this is pretty cool just to, like, play in a torture serial killer dungeon or something, because they're just creepy. You'll see. Well, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I'll play it.
Watch this. I've got a plan. Yes. I can beat this thing.
Excellent.
I hate these.
The teeth close up.
These come straight out of the Sega Saturn era.
Right.
And I don't know why they thought this was a good idea. I don't know why they thought kids liked seeing close-ups of the human body and, like, weird shadows and shit. Like,
it's... I understand. I mean, it was an E3 event, so I could see it where, like, you go into this room and there's all these TVs and these weird videos are just like, as they're, like, just to tease the announcement that's going to be happening. Like, if they haven't showed the console and you're going to the event, I could see it for that. Not after you've shown the console. It's like, okay, now we can watch some actual gameplay, please. Like, I think that's more interesting. oddly enough. Like, at the time, when I showed people NFL 2K, it was more impressive than anything that some weird marketing zooming into people's teeth could have done, you know?
Right. I honestly, I think Nintendo's doing it right with the Switch 2, because when they first debuted it, they showed a glimpse at the console and a little idea of what might be new with it. And then when they did the reveal, it was straight up like almost like a car salesman, like, but like in a very matter of fact, like, here's all the things it can do. And honestly, that speaks to me. And I wish the Dreamcast did that in their like early ads, where they're like, the Dreamcast is an all-in-one device. Go online, you know, do this, do that, all in a, you know, like, I think Sega was coming off of the Genesis and the Saturn, and they were consoles that just, like, what did the Saturn's back little cartridge port do? I don't know. I didn't know as a kid. The Genesis was like, oh, you got to add all these add-ons and shit to make it, like, play new games. The Dreamcast really should have been, you know, like, advertised out of the gate as an all-in-one box. Not like a set-top box, but like an all-in-one gaming device where you could play online, you could browse the internet, you could get all of these cool accessories and the VMU. Like, they should have really just plainly sold that instead of showing all these, like, people's faces in darkness with all this mystery. Like, you're a company with consoles that are constantly struggling. Why do you keep doing this, like, weird, mysterious, like, edgy ads campaign when really you just want people to buy your stuff? And what really spoke to me was, like, all of the features it had. And that's why the Phantasy Star Online ads really were, like, exciting to me, because I'm like, oh, I can talk to Japanese people. Like, I can be in America and play a game with Japanese people, and there's a translation, like, method within this game where I can talk to them. That's so cool. Anyway.
I would agree with you. I think this might work for, like, like I said, like, they haven't showed the console off and you're walking in a hallway to a meeting or a press event that they're finally going to show you the first glimpse. And you're like, whoa, what is this? This is getting creepy. Oh, okay, the atmosphere. I get that, but, like, you can't be showing this to people that already saw the Dreamcast. It's stupid.
I think the problem with a lot of these, like, sort of, like, weird body horror things that they did with Dreamcast and Saturn.
And Sony does them too.
I think the marketing guys or the ad execs just thought this is what people liked. And I don't think anyone said to them, who is this speaking to? Like, who enjoys this? Because I don't know of any kids who are like, oh, I really like the Saturn ads where, like, people's bodies would, like, change and they had, like, shit floating around their heads. Like, no one talks about that, you know? It's just weird. It's a weird aesthetic that I don't know who it was for. It was really bad.
We're off to a bad start, but maybe the launch ad will change your mind.
Okay,
so
let's do it.
This is the day you have trained for. The day you have studied for. Utilize your superior skills. Your superior intelligence.
Sit down, rodent.
Oh, you were one.
Don't make me hurt.
Whoa.
Learn to defeat your ruthless enemy.
She's so tall.
Brian, you're gonna get roofed.
She's doing the rock eye.
Yeah, so that one was just a bunch of characters, and it was selling the Dreamcast, this felt like. What do you think about the a little bit out-of-dated boxer commenting? he's a little sleazy, I would say. But besides
that's okay. That's not out-of-date. That's modern, dude. Come on.
You're going to do that at work tomorrow?
That's alpha male. Well, I can't. I work remote, so I can't. I'd have to message someone and say, hey, get on a quick video call.
So I can harass you.
I love this ad. Yeah, right. Because I like the beginning where they clearly show a hint of the console and flying into it. I think that's really cool. I think the whole swirl thing, like flying through the swirl until you're inside this like mega shopping mall, basically, where every layer is like a different game. And this like mother brain in the middle is like, it's a little weird, but then once you get to all the characters, you're like, wow, look at all of the different games within the Dreamcast library, and look at these graphics. And as a kid, you would think these are the graphics, and they technically aren't. But like I said, they're using the assets, which I think is really cool. And also, we didn't know at the time, but there were characters in this that we wouldn't see for 2 years. The Floygen brothers?
Yep, yep.
Like, they didn't come around until the 2001. So it was, like, lots of weird little Easter eggs. We just, like, Eggman is holding, what is it, Heugel Floygen, the smaller one. You see him? At 117, Eggman's actually picking him up and holding on to him.
Oh, yeah.
It's so weird, but and having Ready to Rumble and Virtua Fighter like
together.
Oh, and someone's petting Big the Cat. You don't see that too. It's very quick. Someone's patting his head.
We need to get these ads in high quality. Like Sega has to have these somewhere, right? Like I want to see the models and everything, and like how it.
You know who might have them? Darren Wall might have them from Read Only Memory, the books.
But he's not going to release them.
No, he's probably not. But then, like, finishing this ad, and I don't want to do this for every ad, but I just want to say, like, having Tails interacting with, like, a sports guy, that's really unique. But then when they fly out and the guy's holding the console, it very clearly shows you how small this thing is. And so cool. Like, this is... At the time, people need to remember, like, CD players were pretty big. Like, a compact disc player was maybe... two compact disc players stacked on top of each other would be a Dreamcast.
Not only that...
it's no joke.
It showed you the graphics it does, and it showed you how many games it has and characters it has, and it has an online modem, as you can see right here. And it all is that small, which is...
Yeah.
Pretty much says it all. I did send you a link to another video. This is the actual launch on MTV. It's a 1.5 minute movie. This is the one that was
one well.
This is the one that was directed by the guy that did Behind Enemy Gates and Another Day to or Live Free and Die Hard. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's watch it and we'll discuss it while it's on.
Let's do that.
Well enough directed. Sony trying to steal the Dreamcast secrets.
Oh, I don't want to do pausing at all, but
we can pause it.
1 second in, you can see the Japanese Dreamcast commercials down there with the managing director. Remember the old guy?
Oh, yeah, right there, yeah.
Walking around. He's down there. They did like a little shout out to the 1998 campaign. That's so cool. Anyway, all right, let's go.
We'll continue it from the 1 second. So the girl's hacking.
Yeah. As you do.
And she has like the Vegeta scouter.
Yeah.
What's his power level? Well, he works at Sega. Oh, it is the PlayStation. Okay, I never noticed the little PlayStation badge.
She's the Sony hacker.
Yep, Sega Gaga.
Yeah, they got her though. She's running out.
I like the orange and green.
Right. Okay, so she jumps out the window. She's running away.
This is a pretty high budget. You got it.
It's still coming. And there's like a... Is that like a Sega drone going after her or something?
I didn't know Sega had its own, like, small army.
Oh, it's an airplane. Like a Sega airplane.
It's the Yakuza that,
they
movie.
Would not do this post-9/11, though.
It's like a dragon.
It movie. Is like the Yakuza movie. All right, so she found a motorcycle. She's on the run.
Oh, no.
But the Dreamcast can change the traffic lights and they kill her, basically. Oh, she's still alive. And she stole the Dreamcast. What? And it was Sonic. Sonic's inside.
And it does the whole, you know, teasing the marketing... teasing the next marketing campaign, which is the inside of the consoles we just saw.
Now,
what do you think about this? I was going to say the picture of the Dreamcast with a big phone. Like they are.
Yeah, I was about to mention that. Yeah. Like, why is that in there? What is that?
Yeah,
I guess the internet, right?
Right. Like, I wonder if people just assume like, I don't know, like, was this subliminal? Like, oh, people, when they see this, they'll think it's a modem or web TV, because that was popular back then, having a web TV.
Maybe. But so, yeah, Sonic's inside, and then he falls. We got her. And then when he lands, the people standing around, it's funny because Dr. Eggman's scale is completely off. Eggman is like half the height of every other human.
You're right. Look how small he is.
And yeah. And Amy is really small too. And there's the Floygen brothers. There's the, I think that bird is from Floygen brothers. There's sports characters. I think that's Power Stone. Like the super form of
the Arabian. The zombies girl. From House of the Dead 2 look like cardboard cutouts a little bit.
They kind of do, yeah. It's, I think, the lighting. And the Floygen brothers are there. And it's, what is that, Randy Moss hitting on Sarah Bryant?
Yeah.
That's great.
It's canon.
And Randy Moss hits on Sarah Bryant. That's amazing. That's a great ad, though. I like that. I don't like the eyeballs and, like, teeth and weird stuff like that.
So, it did have a lot of not gameplay. Maybe they could have shown more gameplay on the TVs or something. Like, when they're doing her in the Sega, they could, like, be showing a little bit of, like, sports games while she's running or something. Just to get more... I think people underestimate at the time how good the graphics were for the Dreamcast. So, maybe I'm just... So we go watch the next one. This one's called the Sonic Adventure ad, which is pretty iconic in the Sonic community. So I'll press play. You ready?
All right. Yeah.
The music. But why is he... Is Sonic a DJ?
He is. There's like a couple pieces of art, official art, where Sonic's DJing. So yes. My bad.
And he does math. Sonic
Adventure. Yeah, stay off the light speed. I take light speed actually, but it's only for medicinal reasons.
So about the ad, it has like this obviously made up song. It's not a Sonic song. It's like these. It's I don't even know who the basketball player is, but he's rapping with this sumo from Virtual Fighter, which I forget his name. Like. Asakari or something. I forget his name.
And Tails just tweaks out. It's so funny. And Robotnik just stands there watching him.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I like the interactions, but I think it's interesting that it's a Sonic game, right? But there's like, they're focusing so much on these other characters rapping. It would have been more interesting if like Tails and Knuckles were the ones rapping. And everyone was partying with the Sonic crew.
I have to appreciate that, though, because I think what I really loved about these ads was it made everything feel connected. So it's like, you know, like I was a big Sonic fan at the time, but I'm seeing these other characters interact with Sonic. So I'm like, okay, so maybe the sports games aren't so lame. Maybe they're kind of cool. I should check him out. Who's this guy? Oh, he's from Virtua Fighter. I remember that. I should try that. Oh, cool. The Crazy Taxi people. Like, it just kind of validates everything. And I feel like with the Dreamcast, that's when I would actually defend sporting games, even though like a generation earlier, I was like, man, I hate sports video games. But then when the Dreamcast came out, I'm like, you know, NFL 2K is like the best sport football game ever.
It has online.
And it's got great internet. Yeah. And I'd try to sell it to my friends because I knew people would buy NFL 2K. And then I could be like, oh, you should check out Sonic Adventure. You know, like it was a good... And I remember rappers at the time, they had Dreamcasts built into their car so they could play NBA and NFL 2K. Like that was extreme. That was so... To me, that was so cool because I was like, all right, these guys like Dreamcast too.
Your dad ever let you or buy or modify his vehicle so you could play your Dreamcast on the go or nah?
No, but I did have a friend whose dad had a small portable TV like stuck between the seats and then like a VCR, and it was like all plugged into the cigarette outlet, and they would like watch VHS tapes in their car, but the tapes would like skip and shit because The right. car was bumping around.
Right. I'm like, that's no, yeah, that's bad. The next ad is called Crazy right. Taxi. I'll press play.
Of course. Let's go inside. This is a great one.
Yeah, the DMV. Power Stone.
Lots of power. Yeah, lots of Power Stone representative representation. I love this one because the footage is like within the scene. They don't cut away. It's like a video monitor within the DMV.
Oh yeah.
I love this one. Yeah, that one's really good. And I feel like they show you just enough to get you like to want to check out the game.
Right. And I love that there's a lot more character for some of these characters. Like, yes, it's a little silly marketing-wise, but it really it really makes it, like, I don't know. I just like them all interacting, and I think the idea that the Dreamcast has its own DMV or its own, like, economic, like, these characters are just living in your console is pretty cool take on an ad.
And so, you have to remember, too, some of these characters were brand new. Like, BD Joe now, we, like, have him in Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing. Like, there's he has a little bit more character now from some of his other appearances. But, like, he was brand new. And so to have him, like, interacting in these ads, it really gave him more character, you know?
I agree. The next ad is called Space Channel 5, a little video game that just debuted Ooh. With the Dreamcast. So we'll press play and watch that.
Check it out.
The Club.
I love this one. Yeah, it because it's very much in the Space Channel 5 world.
Yeah.
And it just shows how many characters Space Channel 5 has by design, because the all the characters that would like dance with you and stuff.
It's a killer.
And it made Ooh La La look unique, because they're like, wow, she got an ad where it wasn't all the other characters, but she has so many characters within her game that they could fill a whole club. Like, it's pretty cool.
And she's a diva, you know.
Yeah, she is a diva.
This one's a weird one. The Soul Calibur ad.
Oh, are we going to watch that one now?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's the next one. Yeah, I'll press play.
Oh, okay.
All right. Unless you wanted to talk about the Space Channel 5 one.
No, that's fine. Let's do Soul Calibur. Let's burn through some of them. Coming to a dream. So it's at a drive-in. And they're watching Soul Calibur. You will and... Is that Allen Iverson or something? Who's that making out? It's the
girl from Ready for to Rumble, which they keep using.
Making out with him.
Yeah, which they keep using and as a spokesperson.
Yeah.
Weird. And I'm like, okay, so a few things that's interesting about this one is, like, first of all, that's a Namco game. Sega's advertising it with their, you know, brand. And also they use acclaimed characters of Ready to Rumble very, very, like,
also
front and center, though they're on, like, PlayStation 1. Sorry.
And I'm noticing a trend here, too, where all of the football players are hitting on the women.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
I don't want to say it, but yeah, super sexual.
Super kind of stereotypical of what these athletes are. You know what I mean? There's, like, a stereotype of these athletes that, like, they just banged every girl, and it's like, you know, like, they're people, they're just normal dudes.
Does
you know
the,
that?
When the ads begin, I don't think the Dreamcast has the compatible with Windows CE on them. They, like, removed it.
Oh, I didn't notice it.
Yeah, it's not there.
So next now are mostly sports ad, but I think they're, I guess, unique in their own way. To see how they market it towards different demographics. So the next one is the NFL 2K ad.
All right. Let's do it.
There you go.
It's... Oh, yes. With Rayman.
Right.
I love this one because they show old video games and then they show new video games.
Very
good. And it's...
Very good.
It's very generational, too, because it has, like, an old character. And he's like, when I was in games, they were like this on the Genesis. And it just does show like how far sports games came in that time.
I agree. And I think, like I said, that when I used to show people the NFL games, that's what they made them think, wow, this looks way better than the Nintendo 64 and the PlayStation 1. They even showed you the models interacting with each other, which I think gives it a little more life. Very good commercial. I think it was very effective. I think it was cool to also put it with other characters, because people that play NFL games sometimes do buy other games. So,
yeah.
Very cool. But another thing that it was weird about it is also putting Rayman as a character, which is not another Sega. So, like, this was interesting in the fact that Sega was open to letting third parties jump on the advertisement for free.
Oh, yeah. Very third-party friendly.
Yeah, so I don't know if Nintendo would ever do that. But the next one is NBA 2K.
Okay. So this one flies into a dojo. What is it,
Iverson? I'm getting work done to the boys, Taka.
Oh, he bounced that.
A real person.
Oh, and he butt. very.
That's what he needed.
He did. Very Virtua Fighter friendly, though. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, they were really pushing Virtua Fighter in a way. Like, even though it wasn't really technically the best fighting game on the Dreamcast, I feel like people talked more about Dead or Alive 2 or Soul Calibur or Marvel vs. Capcom 2. No Capcom games, which is weird because they also had Code Veronica that was a exclusive. That would have been cool. So
that was Iverson. I was right.
Yeah. This is Allen Iverson. Yeah, he's apparently not allowed, or he and Michael Jordan don't like each other or something. I don't know. But
is he on the cover of NBA 2K?
Yep. Yeah, he's the cover artist. I was gonna say,
and then Randy Moss was on all the NFL 2Ks, right?
Yep, the Vikings.
Yeah.
I was gonna say. What's interesting is he's not hitting on any women. So, I mean, there's something on this ad for him.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I do like the graphics they do here, and they show, like, usually back in the olden days when they did commercials, it was a CGI trailer of what they wanted the game to look like. Like, Final Fantasy VII was the CGI cutscenes. This is the...
Yeah.
Pretty close to the character models, and then they show you the gameplay to show you, like, no, this isn't BS, you know? This is what the Dreamcast looks like. So, very cool.
And there's... And the fact that a Virtua Fighter character, like, taught him...
Yeah. It's
just funny. And it also shows off the multiplayer, because it's got three dudes sitting there. I don't know. I'm trying to check. I don't think all three of them are playing the game, because it's only a two-player game.
Yeah, it's two people. The other guy's just watching.
They don't have any VMUs in there, though.
Yeah, no career mode saves. Sorry.
No.
The next ad is in a different link. The other one was one video. But this one is the NHL 2K You Like Hockey trailer. It starts at 6 seconds in. I'll press play.
Game rated. All right, let's do it.
Big the cat, the towel boy.
Give me the phone, man. Your mommy. Oh yeah, that's great. Her mommy. Hey, Billy. So, this one's interesting because it actually has the characters from the game talking to the kid on the phone.
Hello?
And the...
They hit on the mom.
Yeah. And then, but the Sega crossover is only Big the Cat. Big the Cat's the only character to make an appearance. And I don't know if this is before Big became, like, the meme that he is, but that's such a Big the Cat thing. Because he would just, like, randomly appear in spots in later games.
I like that he's Big the Cat. It's funny that they're talking to some kid, but there was no online play. So it's almost like an ad for, like, they're like, oh, well, we can't make him talk to him on the Dreamcast because there is no online play in this game. So let's have the phone. Maybe they should have just dropped the whole talking to the player in a way.
Yeah.
Because they should have waited until they actually had an online game to do that. yeah, I don't know what else they could have done. Maybe like a fake sports talk thing with another Sega character. But this is an okay ad, I would say. And I think the NHL 2K games weren't even that popular. At least I never heard people talk about them that much.
Yeah, they weren't top of the pile.
The next ad actually has a tie-in with us. Remember who worked on this game?
Kiyoshi Okuma.
Right.
One of our guests and friends of the show. Yeah, from he's developing Strike Blazinger, I believe the name is.
Harbinger? No, I'm joking. They didn't. I was just trying to get you confused.
All right, let's do it.
I'll press play.
Yeah, Kiyoshi did models of the stadium, so we're seeing his work here.
What the hell is this?
Like Tyrese, he'll sing on anything.
This is such a weird ad, though.
What's he thinking? Like I'm not gonna mix it up.
Pedro's kids.
I've got more pitches than a used car dealer. I've got more control than.
So it's like a.
I am El Duro.
I'm a stylist.
World Series baseball team.
Oh, and I have to say I've never seen this ad.
I've never seen this one either. I thought it was interesting. Maybe they didn't play it that much.
It's so Pedro. I don't know the backstory. I'm not a big like sports guy. But it's like a, and if you look at when they're panning across, you can see the Crazy Taxi guy setting up the shot. So it's Axel and BD Joe doing the camera and Mike.
Oh, yeah, you can see them.
So they're like, they're like visiting the stadium to do this like.
Hey, Reese, he'll sing on anything.
Pedro's kids, like, and it's almost like a charity, like, please give today to these poor children.
But he's making fun of these kids. He's like, oh, this
one. But he's making fun of them.
Yeah, because they're players that play the game, and it's all like the Dreamcast mocks you while you go to sleep, I think is the message here.
And then he pulls like a Deadpool and like grabs the mic and starts screaming into the camera. That's kind of good, though. I like that one. It works with sports. Right? Because sports are always like egging on the other player. So I think that works.
I never liked baseball games. I think when I was a kid, I did. There's a few baseball games I did get into, but they were more like you had power-ups and more arcadey. So I don't know if I've ever been to realistic baseball. So
right.
The next one is called America Online, and it has nothing to do with the internet service provider that I know a lot of you guys are
nothing
still
to do
using.
With AOL. No.
Yeah. So let's press play and watch it.
This is a classic for
it's
sure.
Evening in America.
So
and across this great land, young men and women
it's us
showing
coming together
people from all over the world
of the internet
with Dreamcast fans.
Common goal to each other's booties. Sega Dreamcast games are now
but it's showing them all playing online and a crow gets killed.
Americans. Jack into SegaNet through your Dreamcast console.
This is the best bit though where it's
play NFL 2K
they're doing like a heal the world sort of thing singing into microphones but it's all the Dreamcast characters whistling.
Yep.
Without suffering the scent of life. And then the dogs are biting it, which is insane. And Beat is there. I think this is the first time Jet Set Radio
it's
makes
so much chaos.
SegaNet is born, and suddenly we are one.
And then a gas explosion.
Indivisible, united in the pursuit.
They made it seem like
the guy just died.
Anything could happen when you're online.
And a Dreamcast, they show a Dreamcast that's been destroyed in their ad, which is really wild. Like the controller cords are completely severed. It's got like, honestly, if you have a junker Dreamcast and you want to, like, do a custom job, do this. Like, singe the top of it, and then you can have, like, a screen-accurate America Online ad Dreamcast. But
or you could just sell it. This is the Dreamcast that was used in the ad.
From the ad, yeah. But looking, so Seaman actually narrates this ad, which is really wild.
Of course.
I think we talked about it on our Seaman episode, but the voice of Seaman... He was in, Upright Citizens Brigade or something in California. He's a a sketch comic.
Mm.
But yeah, so this it's wild. So this whole group of characters doing this like whistling America the Beautiful are in a studio with a giant SegaNet sign on the wall. And there are... virtual arena. What's really weird is I think throughout all these ads, they got the scale wrong for Sonic and Friends, because E-102 is there and he's like at like knee height. He's so tiny. And so is... But there's some debuts. So there's Amigos there from Samba de Amigo. Beat is there from Jet Set Radio. And so I really have to imagine that the people making these ads were saying to Sega, let us know of any and every character that you have for a game, even if it hasn't been announced yet.
Just to put
because
them in the
back. Because we want to give us the assets because we want to put them in here to make it as crazy as possible. And I have to wonder, like, when this ad debuted, like, was Jet Set Radio, like, well-known? Was this, like, people's first look at Beat in action? It could have been. But yeah, Crazy Taxi's there, More Aliens, Virtua Fighter. Beat, it's weird seeing Beat not cel-shaded.
Or have you noticed
that's
that
a little weird.
They've been using the monsters for House of the Dead, but not like G or the human characters ever?
That is true.
It's like only the zombies got in.
Seaman is there.
This is an iconic ad. This is, I think it's really good. But in the end, as you could tell, this is when they were converting back to the Sega Scream, which they, with the crow saying Sega. But it's like a crossover, kind of.
Who's the guy at 32 seconds in the middle whistling? He's from a first-person shooter, isn't he?
Yes,
is he from
Quake 3.
Quake 3, that's right.
Yeah. So they're using...
What a weird... So it's Allen Iverson, Randy Moss, and the guy from Quake 3 whistling together.
You can't have a more iconic trio.
With tails. With tails.
That's as iconic as it gets.
But I love this ad for so many reasons, but it shows kids playing multiplayer together. And to see four Dreamcast controllers just looks so cool. But I also like it shows people alone playing because they're playing with people. And for me, that was the big thing because I didn't really know any... I didn't have friends that came over to play games with me. So the online gameplay was a really big deal for me because I had just moved... And one of my best friends had a Dreamcast, and we lived about 2 hours apart.
Oh, dang.
So we would do Phantasy Star Online sessions, like, every weekend.
Nice.
And so it was, so it was special. I'm not going to cry. So.
Don't cry. Don't let these bastards see you cry. The next one is NFL 2K1. This one's called New York Jets Fans. Let's play it.
So it looks like footage at some sort of like party.
It's just
in New York bar.
It's in Jersey.
Yeah, and then it cuts away to gameplay. Somebody help out Dwayne. But they're actually on a TV within the Vikings locker room within the Dreamcast. And the Vikings are really mad.
So I mean,
and then the guys had Sega.
That's
all right. It's weird that they didn't fly into the Dreamcast or out of it anymore.
No, this is more of the transition. That's why it wasn't in the It's Thinking ads. But I still put them in here because it has some aspects of it, like the characters talking to the camera and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It still takes the best aspects of it. And this one's interesting because everyone hates New York Jets fans. New York Jets aren't even in New York. They're in Jersey, so that's why they have these annoying Jersey guys. Sorry, New York Jets fans. You guys have a, like, whatever. If you like the Jets, I'm sorry, but you know I'm right. Anyway, the next one. And what do you think about shaving their back? This is like back to the early 90s Sega.
Yeah, it's fine. I like the Sega Scream and everything, but I feel like they should have leaned more into the It's Thinking and kind of pick a lane.
Right.
Like, I know people get excited now when Sega throws in a Sega Scream in an ad, and for me it's like kind of a little eye roll because it's like either stick with it or move on. I don't know.
the last ad.
I like it. I don't want to sound like I don't like it, but
I think yeah. All right, these last one. All these ads, none of them, I mean, outside of the E3 promos with the weird faces, have been terrible. Like, I think some of them are just not as good as other, but I've never seen one of these ads, and I'm like, oh my God, what were they thinking? This is the worst thing I've ever seen. So let's look at the last one. NBA 2K1 Validation, all capitals.
All right, let's do it.
We're the Laker lads of Glendale, California.
Laker lads.
Over Allen Iverson and the 76ers. Validation for the Lakers.
Validation. So it's got these four guys who look like
Mormons.
Church. They look like Mormons or church boys.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I can't lose to guys like this. Somebody get NBA 2K1. Go to Sega.net through the Dreamcast and knock these Sunshine boys out the box.
You're in violation.
Dang.
Oh, and they're spanking each other.
Yeah, I think that's okay. What you do when you join a cult. I will say,
I guess,
the idea behind the ads is basically that there's annoying people on the internet and you should get on with your friends and beat these people, which I guess is a good selling point to the online feature. It's funny because I think that the game calling you and talking shit about you in the NHL one in the beginning was better, but I can see where they're going for here. It's just kind of jarring sometimes to see the Allen Iverson as a 3D model talk to real life people.
yeah, I think that is a little weird.
Yeah. So then the next ads, these will probably go by quick because there's not that many. It's basically the print ads. And like I said, these aren't that great. The first four are the weird cryptic ads. It's like an eye, and it's like mishmatched with a bunch of screens. It's basically that video we saw for the E3 promos, but there's three ads based on each one. The designs of the ads are fine. Like everything like looks clean and nice, but I don't think it sells the Dreamcast as a marketing product. Like graphic design wise, the guy did everything he could, but none of these scream I want to buy a Dreamcast out of the first four.
I think, of these four, I mean, what they really showcase is someone's, at the time in 99's, like, graphical abilities to utilize Photoshop to make very interesting imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm looking at it and I can see that this was definitely made by someone with, like, skill.
For sure.
Because they could do all these cool effects and like, it does take a lot of, like, I don't know, like, at the time, using Photoshop, 1999, like, this was very difficult to do. I'm presuming they used Photoshop and then they, like, used elements of, like, Illustrator and InDesign to build it out. But,
yeah,
of course. For a Dreamcast ad, it doesn't sell it to me.
Kind of a waste of
money. It's interesting too that they're numbered. Have you noticed that they actually number the ads? So in the lower throughout the ad and in the lower left, you can see 0.02.
Oh, I see. I put them out of order. Nice.
No, that's and then 0.03, and then
what do you think?
0.01.
What do you think about the eyeball? That's just like a Dreamcast logo on an eyeball, and that's it.
You know it's alive worse. It knows it's alive. Even if your memory doesn't fail you, it can't help you. And then outsmarting it will only make it smarter. Like it I don't know. It's very like kind of high level heady. And also is that Braille within the 9999? Do you see that?
Let me look. I have it.
There's
small. Oh, it is Braille.
Yeah, so there's all these like weird little things going on. It kind of reminds me of Wipeout, the lower portions where they would use like where the Designers Republic who did the Wipeout in-game assets, but also or in in-game graphics, but also ad campaigns. They really like to lean into like showing the actual barcodes, showing the CMYK like print values, which are appearing on these ads, like. I think it's cool and all, but I don't know if it's what you want for a console launch for a company that has been struggling in the last generation.
Why? Well, this is why I said that the actual commercials were actually really well done compared to the print ads.
Right. And, yeah. Yeah. So now looking at this fifth image.
Yeah. Let's go to the other one. This one I call these the Dreamcast display ads. We'll look at them.
These are the ones I own. So this is that brochure I talked about.
Okay. So this is from the brochure. Okay. I didn't even know. I've never seen these before. So I was like, where the F did these come from? Were these in ads? And since Sega
and I like these because it
Sega Retro doesn't have PDFs right now, so I can't go back and look at where they were from. So that's why I didn't know.
And it's interesting because this one is 0.01 again, MK 50,000. Like all these weird, I don't know what they mean. There's like bits of like code or something. It says A/MH. I kind of want to feed this into like ChatGPT and be like,
what it gives you back.
What is the meaning behind all these numbers and symbols and stuff? You know, like
it decodes the whole thing.
It's done. I've used it for decoding things before. I would be like, what is this? Like the Braille, I bet it could do, but,
I do like the one where it has all the game screenshots and it says it's already figuring out how to beat you. That's like the best print ad they've done on this whole thing.
For sure. Yeah, I love that. My favorite part of this print piece is that it clearly lays out the accessories. So it's like, here's controller, here's the VMU, here's where the modem is. It shows the VMU going into the controller. Like, this is what really sold me on the Dreamcast. Not this specific brochure. I think I got this after the fact. But, like, it lays it out. Controller, visual memory unit, modem. And then when you open it up, it has a very clear list of all of the, not only launch titles, but, like, games coming out for the console, telling you who the publisher is, like all these games are coming out fall 1999. Like it's just great. And like you said, like it shows the screenshots and it's so varied. And we know from the launch that the Dreamcast had a very diverse launch lineup. Like you look here and it's like satisfying every genre really. So yeah, I love this print ad. I think this is a great use of that. It's thinking aesthetic, but I can't say the same for those early print ads.
So the ending of the show is the reception and impact. And I had one of the AI things research this for me because
you get canceled.
I decided to do it because I think we're biased in impact. So I was like, well, I wonder what an unbiased AI, at least unbiased in Sega, hopefully. And we were actually in the notes that it gave me back, so let's do it.
That's interesting.
The campaign achieved high visibility and strong initial sales, but the effectiveness and sustaining momentum is debated. In sales terms, the launch was record-setting. Sega sold 225,132 units in 1999, or 9999, and made $98.4 million. Then that was the biggest 24-hour retail haul in entertainment history and passed 500,000 units in 2 weeks. I think the Switch 2 did like 2 million in like 48 hours. So it really shows you how much larger video gaming is now. By early 1999, over 1 million Dreamcast units were sold in North America. That's pretty good in a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
Passed 500,000 in 2 weeks by November. Pre-orders had topped 300,000 at $25 each, which I forgot that companies make money off of pre-orders, dwarfing even PlayStation launch orders, which were 100,000 in 1994. These figures imply that the marketing blitz successfully generated a buzz and retailer sell-through. Critics and gamers offered mixed feedbacks. Many fans remember the ads fondly. SegaBits calls the commercials great and notes the VMA spot went viral long before YouTube. The edgy, irrelevant tone, whispered threats, and softly spoken tagline was praised by outlets like Sci-Fi, which noted the ads had a throwback, edgy, and weird smartass style in the line of Sega's rebellious image. The Acopolis spot in particular, the girl stealing the Dreamcast, was admired for its cinematics and scope. However, retrospective analysis often faulted the campaign's clarity. Sega Retro observes that not showing the console or games for several weeks, many consumers were confused or unaware of what the Dreamcast was. Do you agree with that, though? That people didn't understand what it was, or the Dreamcast, at least?
I don't know if that really hurt it.
And the tagline itself, its thinking was sometimes dismissed as cryptic marketing speak, which I could see that.
Probably. Yeah, yeah.
Time Extension bluntly calls it complete marketing nonsense. It was marketing nonsense. The console wasn't really thinking. I think them saying it's more advanced than other consoles, and that's why they say it was thinking, I think that's valid enough. And a marketing standpoint. Yeah. Also, marketing lies to you. I don't know if you guys knew that. I'm sorry to tell you guys that, but like, if you guys buy a new Honda, you're not going to be going out in the desert with your friends, drinking juice and doing cool camping adventures. Sorry, guys. In practice, once the PlayStation loomed, Sega's momentum faded. By 2000, declining sales force, price cuts, and shift in branding, Sega quietly abandoned its thinking around September 2000 in favor of the traditional Sega screen branding. In sum, the campaign was succeeded in raising awareness. Dreamcast was highly visible at launch. It just kind of goes back to what we already went through. So, what do you think about... I think this is Gemini or ChatGPT, one of those. Using us as a source, even though we're using it as a source. So now we know each other. Like, what's up, AI?
Yeah, I was about to cancel you for even daring to use AI. But now that AI has included us, then I fully embrace it. And I think AI art is art, and we should hang it in museums. And honestly, I think museums should just be... VR headsets with all the art made by AI.
That'd be great. Maybe we could have the first
be terrible.
Smithsonian AI art museum.
AI art Smithsonian.
Like all it does is like a awful tablet that just streams all the like new images people generated.
It would just be like brain rot memes, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anything you want to add about the It's Thinking 1999 campaign?
Well, I mean, it was definitely unique, but it was also definitely a product of the time. I would say my biggest takeaways is that Sega, I was surprised to learn, I didn't realize this, that they really moved away from It's Thinking pretty quickly and just leaned into the 90s, like Sega making naughty jokes and like shaving people's back and stuff. And I don't know. I actually kind of like the It's Thinking, and I like the mysteriousness of it because it was different from the Sega of the past. It felt a little more grown up, and I don't mind the ads themselves having these like funny moments between the characters, but I like the bookending of the ads with the It's Thinking. Kind of a shame they got rid of it so quickly. But our Patreon pals have some comments. Would you like me to read those?
Of course, please.
All right. So if you support us on Patreon at any level, you can have your memories shared. And George, too, I was going to point something out. Is it true that you turned on something where people can like buy individual episodes if they want to hear them early?
I mean, that was a joke. I just wanted to see if the feature worked. I'm going to take it off. I think it's weird to sell like an episode for $2. I just put it up because that was like, it asked me and I wouldn't, I think yeah. I was tired and I couldn't get past the screen. It wouldn't leave me alone. So I was just like, oh, okay, $2, leave me alone. I'll paste it. So I guess there is one. Just and do someone, a monthly. Do
someone
a monthly.
Did buy it, though.
Why? Don't buy it.
No. I'm saying, so if you support us, why are you telling people don't give us money?
I'd rather them support the show monthly. I'm sorry.
I get it. Yeah, you can support the show monthly, but if there's an episode out there that you're just like, oh man, I just want to hear that one 2 weeks early, then yeah, I think putting them up there for like a couple bucks isn't a bad deal. But in any case, Toy Story was the one, but this one now, It's Thinking, it's the next one. But we have memories here from Nicholas Schaefer. Saying, it's funny because as a kid, I never saw a video game commercial. My first was in my teens with the Shinobi's Back campaign. All the marketing I experienced was at fast food, Walmart, and Toys R Us. For the Dreamcast, I went from experiencing Mario 64 at JCPenney's to hours later walking into Toys R Us and seeing Sonic Adventure on display. That was it. I wanted a Dreamcast and took two more years for me to earn the money to buy one, but I did. And then Daniel Andres says, well, unfortunately, I missed out back in good old 1999, considering that I would have only been 4 years old, going on five at the time, and my family wasn't really aware of the Dreamcast's existence either. My real memories behind these ads lies between discovering them on the internet via Adam Korolik's Dreamcast videos and through you guys, through the Dreamcast magazine episode you guys did, which was a great episode. But yeah, sadly, I didn't grow up with the Dreamcast at a young age. Pity, what a shame. And yeah, Daniel makes a good point. Like, a lot of the people listening might not have experienced this stuff as we did. So it is fun looking back both on the official Dreamcast magazine and the It's Thinking campaign, because we were there.
Barely.
We experienced
our brain was
some
forming.
Of it. Like, well, was yours? Mine was still forming in 99. Yeah, I was.
Mine's still forming right now.
Like, 13, yeah, well, yeah, deforming, it's melting.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And the next episode, you know, I've been debating, but I think we're gonna cover Sonic Advance 2, because Sonic Advance was like episode 50 something, and Daniel Andres, our Patreon picker, has Sonic Advance 3 on his list here, but we haven't covered 2, so I feel bad doing 3 when we haven't done 2. So that's what we're going to talk about on the next Sega Talk, Sonic Advance 2. So get that GBA out, and we'll see you then.
Thanks, you guys, for watching. Catch you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.